Hello, everyone. Welcome back. So we're going to have David Tatman. Not David Tatman. We were just talking to David Tatman.
We're going
to
change subjects and change themes completely for
this
one.
We're going to tone it down. We're going to have fun on our next episode. Right now,
we're
going to
get
serious.
Cerebral.
See,
we can't even say it. You can't even say it.
Cerebral.
Cerebral. Cerebral. See, we're already in trouble. Cerebral.
Yeah. Wow. Thank
exactly.
you for ruining my credibility
You're
with
welcome.
Our audience.
No, yeah. but we want us to be cerebral because we're going to talk about something that's very timely right now, which is Joe.
Well, what I wanted to do was...
See, okay. you like how I laid that
so
on a platter for you?
I was a huge... I know... You know that John F. Kennedy died November 22nd, 1963. It was a Thursday, and I believe it was around 11 or 12 in the morning. I knew that. I'll never forget it. I was a little kid in Hermosa Beach, and I remember the flag. I remember all of us getting told... The kids were in tears. The country loved John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. He was probably the most beloved president ever. I mean, B.S. Lincoln, everybody loved Lincoln, but a lot of people have come to love Lincoln over the years. But half the country was embattled with Lincoln. They hated Lincoln. John F. Kennedy, pretty much everybody loved. And I remember the whole entire school went out on the playground. They lowered the flag. And we were told that he had been assassinated. Mm-hmm. And it was 1963, a week ago, that he was killed. Mm-hmm. And so here we are, timely. A week ago, 1963, the president is releasing, or not the president, but the archives is really, I know you corrected me. Go ahead.
So what's making it, exactly.
Go ahead. No, you're the CNN reporter.
No, don't even say that. No, so what's making it so timely is not only that, but also because the National Archives is releasing previously withheld documents, the JFK Assassination Records Collection Act,
correct.
As we know.
Well, they were supposed to be held till 1938 or 37, mm-hmm. but they decided to, the Congress said, no, we're not, they were sealed until the 30s, 2030s. Mm-hmm. And Congress came along and said, no, we're not going to do that. You're going to release them sooner than that. So
well, the majority
at this time, they're being released. But right now, as they're being released, FBI, CIA, all of the intelligence agencies are intervening and saying, no, you can't do it. It's national security. So Donald Trump said, and to his credit, and I know that'll trigger, oh boy, Niagara Falls.
It's already triggered my eyeball rolling. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I know. But he told them, no, we're going to we'll put it on hold till April. You have till April to get your act together, look it over, see what we can and can't release. This is getting released. But what's national security? We're going to, April. So anyways, he caved to them. And the guy's a hardhead. He doesn't listen to anybody, but he actually, this is so important to the CIA and FBI. They convinced him to put it on hold. And it's hard to convince him of anything.
Well, I mean, they have released them. They have a whole list right there.
Right. We're going to get David on the phone.
So
just a moment.
I can't wait to talk to somebody who is very knowledgeable about this topic.
Oh, yeah. He just wrote a new book about it. So that's mm-hmm. how we got here today. So let's bring our guest on. David O'Brien, are you there, my friend?
I am. Hi, Joe. Hi, Yvette. It's nice to be with you.
Hi, David. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Yvette, my co-host, was a CNN reporter, so she's going to give you a workout today.
Excellent.
Yeah, what says that? I'm so interested to hear all about what you did, your whole adventure, et cetera. But let's tell people, first of all, so we can just lay down the foundation here. Go ahead, Joe.
No, yeah. So anyway, so the documents just got released. And you and I spoke the other day, and you told me that dozens of the documents are completely blank white, not redacted, blacked out, white, which we both know they're not going to catalog, archive, and put empty pages in and catalog it as number 28. If the thing's blank, it's going to be the number 29 is going to be number 28, right? I mean, that just doesn't happen, does it? Or,
well, as you mentioned, Joe, in your intro, the intelligence agencies were fighting tooth and nail to try to get their hands on the documents and determine exactly what they wanted to release or withhold or redact. And it appears that worked because you're right. There's files that are heavily redacted, lots of black lines through them, and some documents that are just absolutely 100% blank with no words whatsoever. And these were documents that were obviously altered by the intelligence agency.
So they must, now that leads to us. Our show is like, ooh, that's an aha moment right there for us.
Well, it is, because the question becomes, if Oswald was just a lone nut, mm-hmm. then what's to hide?
Right.
It does not make sense.
Right. If the narrative is correct, then why all the secrets? Then what are we? What's the fear? Why are we having a meltdown with the intelligence agencies fighting
the brick wall of a president, you know, yeah.
Is it because we're finding out that it's much more, that it's more of a conspiracy that permeates through with other governments, other leaders, with the Cuban government, with the Russians once again coming to the forefront? Is it because of all of that, as opposed to here's just a lone gunman?
Oh, you mean the connections to them? It could incite something. See, I was thinking that it was more the CIA connection or the FBI connection, you know, mm-hmm. that those connections could exploit like civil unrest, and you're looking at it like it could cause instability between partners in the world.
I'm asking David, like, what if you can give like a Reader's Digest version, what is it that, what do we know right now?
Yeah, the and synopsis. What is it? Yeah,
because this is that synopsis. And then where do we go from there?
Give us the meat and potatoes of this whole thing real quick, if you would.
Well, as far as the documents go, the fear, I think, is that there's two things. One, you have to keep in mind that this occurred during the Cold War, the height of the Cold War, and there was definite connections between Oswald and Cuba. He was pro-Castro, pro-Cuba. And also we know that he defected to the Soviet Union for almost 3 years prior to returning to New Orleans and Dallas, where he then allegedly shot the president of the United States. The fear is, amongst the intelligence community, is that his name can be linked to them. So, for instance, from the FBI's perspective, and you know how Hoover was back then, integrity with the Bureau was everything. Mm-hmm. Well, clearly we can see that there was a terrible job done by the FBI in surveilling Oswald in the weeks prior to the assassination. To give you an example, they knew that where Oswald worked. And yet, even though the parade route was announced and the president's motorcade would go right in front of the building in which the Soviet defector worked, they did nothing to surveil him or apprehend him or just put him away for a few weeks just to look at him. They did nothing. And the CIA is equally guilty. Here's the guy, and Naval Intelligence, by the way.
Actually, wait
a
second. If I can, I interrupt you. I'm sorry. I read, and I think it was from one of the online news resources, that he was on their radar, but they couldn't find him.
Well, that's ridiculous, because they were interviewing Marina Oswald mm-hmm. in the weeks prior to the assassination. And to assume that if they were interviewing Marina and knew where she lived, mm-hmm. that they couldn't figure out where Lee Harvey Oswald worked,
And he was at work. He wasn't hiding from them.
So do you think
at all. He was work. He had a job. Right. He had a routine. He even went back and forth visiting Marina and the kids. So if they wanted to surveil him properly, they could have been on his tails 24/7 leading up to the president's visit, but they didn't.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you this. So is it possible, because the documents, and it even references, view the document here, it was online, it was a download page I have, and it said that they knew, they had warning signs of him, they were looking, talking to his ex-wife, you know, the wife and so on, and they're saying that he kind of went under the radar. Is it possible that these documents have been doctored to fit a narrative? Because the documents are saying they were looking for him.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was under their nose. So, I mean, either they weren't very bright and able to find him, they weren't really trying. What's going on with that?
And that would be the question. Is it the reason that they did a bad job simply
because... That they deliberately didn't want to find him?
Due to incompetence, or is it because they let him go on for another reason?
Any thoughts there, or is it just that I'm reading bad news?
No, I don't think so. I think that there was a definite incompetence here by the FBI in particular. And they were trying to cover their butts. It would be hugely embarrassing for them to for it to be revealed that they had Oswald and his wife in their scopes prior to the assassination, and then just let this whole thing slip by, and then let a Soviet defector mm-hmm. shoot the president of the United States, because of course that leads to the possible premise that Oswald was involved with the Soviets and it was a Soviet assassination of the president. And so there's lots for the FBI to be embarrassed about. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the FBI was the chief investigative arm mm-hmm. for the Warren Commission. So they had complete control of all documents and information that was going to be passed on to the Warren Commission.
So it's like
there's no surprise
like the
that they tried to cover
the
their
wolf.
Butt. Sorry, Joe?
The wolf minding the wolf. It wasn't a sheepdog looking over the wolf. It was the wolf minding the wolf during that.
Exactly. And that's why I feel bad for the Warren Commission, because they've been slammed over the years. But they were really at the mercy of what the FBI gave them as far as conclusions and evidence and all that stuff. And I think that the FBI, right from moment one, and it's, there's another document that shows that Hoover, within 12 hours of the assassination, was hell-bent on establishing that Oswald was the only assassin and that there was no conspiracy involved whatsoever.
You're jumping ahead. You're jumping ahead, but I was actually going to touch on that a little bit. Yeah, it says that Hoover said he was concerned. Well, in the documents today, the narrative is that Hoover was worried or concerned that people would think that it was a conspiracy, so he was trying to say, we need to have something issued that says, that convinces the public. In fact, the exact quote is, Hoover said, is having something issued so that we can convince the public that Oswald is the real assassin. Now, the narrative today is that was meant to be that we were worried that people wouldn't believe it. But I doubt it, and I doubt that most of Americans would ever buy it. And we're not that stupid. If you're tuning in, Mr. CIA and FBI guys in the black SUVs parked outside our house at 3 a.m.
Alongside the mafia.
Yeah, with the mafia van in front of you. I'm telling you right now, nobody's going to buy it. We're not going to buy it. That comment meant a lot, right? Help me with this.
Oh, for sure. It meant everything. Because the FBI had nothing to lose if it was a lone nut. All they could do is reveal the evidence, and everyone probably would have been satisfied. But if there's a possibility that there was a conspiracy, and the FBI let this individual get away with it, who was then attached to either the CIA or organized crime or the Soviets or some other organization, this is highly embarrassing to the FBI. And Hoover, being the way he was back then, would have nothing of it. And so his first interest was protecting the integrity and the reputation of the Bureau rather than finding out the truth as to what happened to the president.
Right. It was Monday morning quarterback. Hey, before we go further down the line, let's establish this. You and I shared on the phone, and I wanted Yvette to hear it so she could ask some of her great questions. The connection. There's a connection, and you were sharing with me on the phone the other day. There is a definite connection between the CIA, Oswald, the mafia, all of it, all ties together with one or two key players in this thing, right?
Yes.
Share that with us, if you would.
Well, the documents, by the way, do reveal, and I was really pleased because it's the premise of my book, Through the Oswald Window, that there are now documents to support what was believed to be the case for so many years, and that is that the CIA had a working relationship with organized crime. For instance, it goes back to 1960 when Sam Giancana of Chicago, the crime boss, helped Joe Kennedy get his son elected by putting the state of Illinois behind Jack Kennedy. And so he felt indebted. But instead, when the Kennedy boys got into the White House, they created a organized crime unit in the Justice Department and went after organized crime huge.
Right. Bobby was going after them.
Yes, he went out completely after him. But the organization that I talk about was even more firmly put together in 1961 during the Bay of Pigs invasion. So during that invasion, there was the organized crime and the CIA both had a motive to want to get rid of Castro and reinstate Batista. As far as the CIA goes, it was all politics. Castro, of course, was leaning toward communism, and it was 50 miles off the shore of Miami, and that couldn't be allowed. As far as organized crime goes, when Castro took over from Batista, he kicked all the mafia heads out of Cuba, who owned all the casino operations in Havana. So they were making millions of dollars a year in Havana, namely Santo Trafficante, and Carlo Marcello of Louisiana and Texas, and Sam Giancana. And so he kicked them out, and so the CIA recruited the organized crime, who helped fund the Bay of Pigs invasion, on the premise that once we get rid of Castro, you can go back in with Batista, you can get your casinos back, you're going to make millions of dollars again, everyone's happy. And to your point, Joe, just the connecting dots is a fellow named David Ferry, who was a friend of Lee Harvey Oswald. They go back together all the way back to 1955 at the Civil Air Patrol in New Orleans.
The Civil Air Patrol is when you're a kid, right? You're like,
well, I'm sorry, Joe?
Civil Air Patrol is when you're a kid. You're a teenager in Civil Air Patrol. My son was
He was 15 years old at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and David Ferry was an instructor, and he also helped train the anti-Cuban rebels for the Bay of Pigs invasion. And two other very notorious figures were involved at that very same time, E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis. And if you know their names, it's because they emerged once again
with Nixon
in 1972 as being involved in the Watergate crime. And both were charged and served time for their involvement in Watergate.
So wait, so I want to bring the audience up. So some of the audience is completely with you and they understand everything there, but some of them are younger and won't know. So you're going to go, well, why did the Kennedy's father, come on, that's absurd that the Kennedy's father would be beholden to the mob. But the fact is that Joe Kennedy raised his millions of dollars during Prohibition selling bootleg booze. So he was part of the whole group. I mean, that settles that. And then you mentioned why would the CIA, the audience might want to know, why was the CIA turning to the mob? And that was because Congress was cutting the funds. We want to know what you're doing with the money. You're not just going to hand you blank checks. And they didn't want to tell you. So the way to do that would be to go through the mob. Or in later years, in the 70s, they did it by raising money by selling bringing drugs from South America,
right,
selling it and trading it for arms. And my co-host here actually has a book on that. I'll let you two talk about that, actually.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the interesting things, too, is that most people, most Americans, don't see that there actually is this type of connection between the government and these other groups like the mafia or organized crime, if you will, or other countries. And here we are in our current state of affairs, current politics, and are we seeing much of the same, would you say?
Well, it's certainly very possible. I mean, obviously, the CIA is stronger and bigger than it's ever been. So is the FBI, so is the military. The money is being thrown at them. Everyone is very concerned, of course, these days about surveillance, drone surveillance, things like that. It's all gotten a lot more sophisticated. But yes, I mean, I think people would be shocked today, Yvette, to know what's going on by their government, both domestically and internationally. And is it all in the best interest of the American public? I'm not so sure,
right,
because of what I've discovered here.
I think that is one of the most interesting things about all of this that I think those of us who have had an opportunity to do some research could impart with the younger generation especially, is that it's not just, I mean, the government does make deals with drug traffickers or with the mafia or whoever else in order
Whitey Bulger
to
was
get
a
what they want. And it's not necessarily like it's all on the up and up.
Whitey
there
Bulger.
Are people who are still in the witness protection program who to this day are still being witnesses to help them. They're in cahoots with the government.
Murderers. Yeah, they murdered 40 and 50 people. Some of the mob guys murdered 40. Whitey Bulger was responsible for countless murders.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an informant for the FBI that they protected.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget Noriega. Noriega was in cahoots with the government, and then they had to turn on him because of public pressure.
David, so let me ask you a question. Don't go from there. I want to ask you a question on this.
Yeah.
Me and the door guy, the elevator guy, when you come into our studio, you got to take an elevator, and the only way to get to our station, he's got to guide you in. Or you can't get to it. Like, he protects us from nut jobs just showing up at our studio. But he was talking about today's show, and he asked me, and what we were talking about was your book and the reference that later on the Congress needed to raise funds, so they sold drugs, brought them in from South America. And do you know where they landed? They landed in a military base in Arkansas, and the governor at the time was Bill Clinton. And they landed in Panama to refuel, and Noriega was the president. Well, Noriega turned on them. They had to do something with him. They put him in a prison somewhere in the U.S., I think Miami, down South Florida. But nobody's ever heard from him since. Is he dead? Is he in prison? So what happened to Noriega? He just went off the map.
Well, the last information I had, he's in America and in an American prison.
In solitary confinement.
As far as I know, he's still alive.
No.
Can't talk to him.
I'm sure he's not in solitary confinement.
Nobody knows. Nobody heard nothing. He's off the map.
He's living large. as
no,
a government
no,
protected
they suppressed
person.
Them. Well, think about this. They're landing in a military base because there's no customs, no immigration. This is all theory now. Don't come kill me, CIA guys. I'm only repeating what I hear. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like what I say, go find wherever I found it on the internet because it's there. But well, we got to worry about that. I don't want to get. I'm just repeating what I hear. I'm not saying it's factual. I'm saying what I heard. But that they were bringing the drugs into a military base in Arkansas from Panama. There's no customs.
Well, I don't think it's any accident that he's quiet, and I think he'll stay that way because he's got so many secrets.
Right.
Right.
But then the
well,
but
that's
then
not the only thing they did. I
Clinton,
mean, they dropped
the
they
governor were, becomes president shortly
yeah, but
thereafter.
They, I mean, they're dropping drugs also take from Panama and also going to Belize, and then they end up doing all these drops off the Florida coast,
right.
And then from there,
Bimini was
they
a
friggin'
distribution plant.
They closed that up, and then they started bringing them through the U.S.-Mexico border,
the tunnel,
the tunnel,
and then Yvette
exactly,
is doing a news story,
and I was there. Yeah, no, through the it's called the Tono Atham Nation, which is uniquely positioned geographically over the U.S.-Mexico border and all that stuff.
Because it was an Indian nation, so they can't have federal law.
No, they do. So that's why there was all this infighting, and that's one of the ways they did that. But anyway, going back to what he was saying is the fact that, yes, most people don't know the government does work like this.
I think everybody in the U.S. suspects that it's, yeah, we're not idiots.
No, because a lot of people think that. They think, oh, no, we wouldn't be doing that. That's not right. We don't work with that because we hear government officials saying, oh, we're not making deals with terrorists, et cetera.
And mommy never kissed Santa Claus.
Exactly. And that's a big,
So,
reveal.
David, I have a question, though. How do we get, like you, okay, everyone agrees that there was more than one shooter. Let's go back to that. Now, you and I talked about that. The whole premise of the book is through Oswald's window. It just doesn't jive, right? Tell us about that, will you? Spend a minute on that.
Well, sure. I became one of few people ever allowed in the book depository building when it was locked and sealed from the public. So I was granted access to the
Oswald window. How were you granted access?
I wrote to the governor. I was a young journalist at the time and a researcher. I wrote to the governor of Texas. He then referred me to the Dallas County. So I wrote to Dallas County and expecting to get turned down because I know other people had gotten turned down. Mm-hmm. And to my amazement, I was allowed access. I was given a date, and I was assigned a person to let me into the building. And so that's what I did. I went down to Dealey Plaza. I did my usual tour as tourists do there, but this time I got to go into the building and go up six flights of stairs to that window where we know history took place. And at the time, the building at that time was completely vacant. It was empty. It was just me in the window as I approached it. And I was troubled at the very moment I looked at the window, and even before I got there, I was troubled by what I saw. And then when I looked down into the kill site, I was literally shocked at what I saw. It just did not jive with the history books.
God, your hair standing on your arm, I could imagine, huh?
What was it that troubled you by
what
you saw?
Yeah, because it doesn't make sense.
Explain that.
Well, as I was walking to the window, I was shocked to see how low the window was to the floor. So there was a brick wall, maybe about 18 inches, and then there's the windowsill, and then there's the window. And the window, to my surprise, when my host opened the window to its widest point, would only open a couple of feet. So by the time I got to the window, I realized that there's not a chance that I could stand there at the window and fire down into the kill site. I'd have to fire from my hip like Wyatt Earp.
Or
which
sitting,
is
could
ridiculous.
You do it sitting Indian style or something like that, right?
Yeah, so I had to kneel or crouch just to point out the window. And that's a very unsteadying position in which to carry out three shots in 5.6 seconds. Now, marksmen will tell you that it's not that difficult, but certainly, given the pressure of the moment and everything involved in what's about to happen, it certainly is not the most comfortable position you could be in to shoot the President of the United States, a moving target moving away from you at 11 miles an hour. And then when I looked out the window, there was a few things that struck me that just said, you know what, this is an absolute terrible, stupid sniper's nest. If I was a lone assassin, this would be a stupid place in which to position myself. It just does not make sense.
Mm-hmm. had a couple of questions related to what you just finished saying before we move on to the next part of it. And that was, when you first asked the governor for permission to go there, to et cetera, just what was it that made you decide to take this on in the first place? This is a huge project. This is a huge topic that has been covered, investigated. It's been reviewed by countless people. What was it that you thought you would be able to do to dispel incorrect information or to actually get to the bottom of it?
I wanted to get to the bottom of it. I had read the Warren Commission volumes, all 26 volumes, when I was 13 and 14. It took me almost 2 years. And I could see all these omissions and contradictions and misinformation. And I started writing to people. And to my amazement, I started to get some letters back that were contrary to what the Warren Report said, such as Dr. Malcolm Perry, who was the first doctor to see President Kennedy and operated on his throat and obliterated a wound that the autopsy surgeons didn't know existed. So when I decided I have to go to the window if I can, and I just have to piece it all together and see what I can come up with. And I was allowed to do it, which I'm so very grateful
for. You're the only person to get that. I mean, like,
why did you think that you would be able to do that if everybody else who's looked into it wouldn't be able to?
It's kind of like the Voice of America. No one bought it. And this guy took action.
No, but I mean,
he was motivated above all of us to go do it. But nobody bought it. Nobody buys it. We're not stupid. We're not idiots. We act like idiots, run around, but nobody's buying it in America. And the fact that you're representing all of America and your voice and the fact that you saw it through,
But what I want to know, David, is why did you think that you could? Was it your investigative skills?
Oh, yeah.
Was it? What was that?
You know what? I wish I could claim to be brilliant about this, but I can't. It was a whim. It was just something.
Really?
I was hooked on the topic. I said, I only know that I won't get into the window unless I ask, and so I did.
And back then, you have to remember,
a lot of people still believe that it was just Oswald. So I think that even the government, at every level, believed that there was really no harm to be done by letting someone maybe have a look at it. And why I was the chosen one, I really don't know, Joan. I was afraid to ask because I didn't want them to change their mind.
Well, I'm glad they did because they clearly underestimated you, my friend.
So, you know, another interesting aspect of it, here we are today in this year, and we're talking about Russia and Russia's involvement in the U.S.
politics.
How can you comment on the irony of the coincidence of that?
Yeah, it was
that?
Largely speculated Russia was involved in this. Yeah.
What, in the JFK assassination?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe that Russia was involved in the assassination. I think they rejected Oswald. I think they found him to be a bit of a... they had no credit. He had no credibility as an intelligence officer or anything. He was just simply somebody who became disenchanted with the American way of life, thought he could do better over there, and it didn't work out. And so I have yet to see any evidence that Oswald was actually a Soviet agent of any kind. Mm-hmm. But what could possibly be, and this is why we still have some problems here, is that it is possible that Oswald was a naval officer who went to the Soviet Union and was acting as a naval intelligence officer when he was there. And so to even learn that that was the case, that he was on the American side and a spy of sorts, then that would be very embarrassing to the American government. So and we know that strange things happened. He went there for 2.5 years.
Yeah, you were saying he defected.
He
renounced his citizenship. When he wanted to come home, he not only could come home in a matter of weeks, which would normally take years. Mm-hmm. The government paid for him to come back with his wife and child.
The U.S. then, government or the Soviet government?
The State Department.
Yeah, and then we're asked to believe that when he came home from 3 years in the Soviet Union, the CIA had no interest in him?
Wait, not just came home. Wait, share this, David. Share with me, share with the audience. The other day you and I spoke, and you shared with me that the timing, he was actually in Russia and capable radar-trained technician during the shooting of Officer Powell's U-2 bomber, spy plane. Share that with us. He was there during that time. And then they let him come back. And they, I mean, that's crazy.
It's beyond crazy because we're led to believe that, that they had no interest in him returning to the United States. But you're right. And this isn't my assertion. This is the assertion of the pilot himself, Francis Gary Powers. He believes that Oswald, when he went to the Soviet Union, he had radar. He was a radar technician when he was in the Atsugi, Japan Air Base, where they were building and test flying the U-2 Renaissance spy plane. And so he knew the U-2's flight capabilities, the radar capabilities, all these things. And then he defects to the Soviet Union, and the United States has all these successful reconnaissance flights, including the one that found all the missiles in Cuba that led to the Cuba Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. But before that, the only time the plane was ever shot down was over the Soviet Union, and Oswald just happens to be in the Soviet Union with all this classified information, and Francis Gary Powers believes, to his dying day, that Oswald may have been responsible for him being shot down. And so there's that in itself is worth trying to cover up if you're an intelligence, if you're the Naval Intelligence Division of the United States government. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you think he's disenchanted with America, with the American life. He defects to go to the Soviet Union. He does all this and then is able to come back. Do you think the Soviets also basically rejected him? So here's a rejected man.
The Soviets, here's a quote. In the documents that were released recently by the State Department, it says the Soviets considered Oswald, and in quotations, a neurotic maniac who was disloyal to his own country and everything else.
That's what I mean. So maybe he was being rejected by both governments.
But you know what?
Do you think that any of that had any part to play in what he did?
Here's where David and I diverse, and what it goes in with what you're asking, because I'm interrupting on her question.
Yeah, let him answer.
All right,
dude.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, answer.
Well,
and then.
I believe that Yvette is onto something.
Thank you, David, for saving me from my co-host, who I'm going to have to stab in the neck
well,
in a second.
We're going to go back to it. We're going to circle my wagons back around, but go ahead.
But first, David.
Well, we know that there were nine Americans who, during the early 60s, defected to the Soviet Union. And then Oswald is one of the few that come back. And then all of a sudden, there's nobody has any interest in him. And so, yes, the Soviets are claiming...
Thank you.
They had no interest in Oswald. They thought he was kind of a crazy individual and unreliable. Mm-hmm. And so the Warren Commission used this to say that Oswald was a lone nut. He was unhappy in any society in which he lived. He wanted a desired a place in the history books, and he shot JFK. And so, you know, on the surface, Americans obviously bought that for a good 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that, and we hope anyway, that these documents still to be released, some of them have to do with Oswald's visit to the Soviet and Cuban embassies in Mexico City.
There we go.
In September of 1963. So we want to find out, okay, what happened there when Oswald tried to get back to the Soviet Union, and why would he try to get back to the Soviet Union when he was rejected in the first place?
Wait,
so what do we know about that?
I was circling. Okay, so a moment ago I said I want to circle my wagons back around. Uh-huh. This is what I wanted to do, because earlier when David and I spoke, we had a conversation about the Bay of Pigs, the collapse of that episode, and the fact that CIA needed to side with the mafia, and that it would allude to the fact that the CIA and the mafia worked in conjunction on this thing. And a lot of people believe that. A lot of the conspiracy is that the CIA and the mafia worked on it. Some people believe that Castro did it. Some people believe the Russians did it. Some people believe it. There was all kinds of things. But let's go to this topic. He went to the Russian embassy. He did not just go to the Russian embassy. He met with a Russian ambassador who happened to have been in the Department 13, which was responsible for sabotage and assassination. That is the person he met in Mexico City. So the fact that the Russians have been cut out of this whole thing, I don't buy it. And now I'm going to have black SUVs and a Russian vehicle out front. Russian,
and join in the mafia.
What do they build? Do they build the Yugo? What do they build? It's going to be out front of my house. What the hell? Go ahead,
we're going to have them all.
Speak to that if you would.
Well, again, that's part of what remains, hopefully, in the documents still to be revealed. And whether it's the Soviets say and CIA documents say, and they believe that the gentleman that you're referring to, the Soviet agent, he just was stationed there at the time, and so he would be the person that would obviously see Oswald because of his history and all that, and it just made complete sense.
But how coincidental.
They're saying there was nothing of it.
How coincidental that he's an assassination expert.
Exactly.
So that
exactly.
is...
And I want to point out, I just want to make it clear to everyone, I'm not a typical conspiracy theorist, if you will.
Oh, neither are we, yeah,
I don't believe that Oswald was not involved. I believe he was involved in the assassination of the president. I just don't think he fired a shot from the sixth-floor window, but I think he was involved because of his organized crime and mafia connections. Uh-huh. That all involves and centers around early 60s Cuba. Now, that doesn't mean that the Soviets were involved or Castro was directly involved. They don't have to be for this to be for this alliance to be in
no,
play.
No, actually,
so then do you think that Oswald was the shooter involved?
Here's my theory, and tell me how far off I am. So the Soviets are downplaying his connection to them. He believes he's working with them. Maybe the CIA has actually convinced him to be a double agent. At any rate, he's a piece of a puzzle. There's a puzzle. There's a team. Mm-hmm. A team going to assassinate. It says that this Russian guy's from a team of assassins, right? You don't go assassinate a president by a lone wolf. You're a team member.
Right.
And Oswald himself was so surprised and so shocked on that piece of news footage when they have him and they're moving him through and Ruby kills him. The last words out of his mouth are, "I'm just a patsy." And he was as surprised. Didn't you say, David, that he went back home and got a gun and got some stuff from his house? If you're going to kill the president and you're the lone wolf, you have packed, you have planned your exit, you have planned your escape, or you're going to commit suicide after the act, or you know you're going to be shot and killed, or you have a great escape plan, but your plan is not going to go home and grab some shit last minute thought, oh, I better run home and get stuff, mm-hmm. right? And the fact is, the CIA could have known all this, that the Russians were playing this. The Russians could have been duped. They're just as big a patsy as Oswald. And the CIA said, hey, guess what? We know, and so we're going to set him up. Well, oh, yeah, sure, we'll set him up. He thinks he's doing this. He's a part of the puzzle, and we're going to do this and that, but it's really plan A. He's not in on plan A, and he got duped, and they had a complete plan that knew it was going to be seen through, and obviously it was, and the shot didn't come from the rear. Everybody can watch the footage and see the shot came from the front. His brain matter flies backwards. His head flies backwards. His head tosses backwards. A bullet goes in small, comes out large. Everyone knows that.
So let's ask David about
that. All right, go ahead. I got all fired up on my soapbox. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. I don't usually get this emotionally charged on these.
Joe needs to write his own book. But right now we're talking to David about his book.
All right, David. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So then, David, he was involved, you were saying, to quote you, he was involved. But does that mean he was not the shooter like most of us think?
He was set up. He thought he was
helping. Yes, I believe he did not fire a shot that day, and for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, he worked in the building, there's no question. Mm-hmm. His rifle was found there, no question. But I think he was set up and didn't know it. I believe his job was to set up that sixth-floor southeast corner window as a sniper's nest because he had the ability to do it. He worked in the building. And then his job, after sealing it off and making sure that no one could see that window from the stairwell or the elevator, then he then went downstairs to the second-floor lunchroom where he said he was at the time of the shooting. And then what happened was, there was a very high police concentration of that building within seconds. And so I think he started to sense that something's not right here.
And how'd they know to be
going there? On. And so I did a test from that building, and this is why I don't think he could have been the shooter. Mm. He apparently, according to the Warren Commission, went from the sixth-floor window down to the second-floor lunchroom in 90 seconds. And he did so by going down four flights of stairs at the very far end, opposite end of the building. So when I was at that window, I did a test and with my host. And we both ran down four flights of stairs and timed ourselves. Hmm. And we were able to get to that second floor lunchroom in 90 seconds, almost to the point. The problem was, when Officer Marion Baker and his boss, Roy Truly, encountered Oswald in that lunchroom 90 seconds after the shooting, he was completely calm, collected.
Not sweating.
Nothing. Well, when I got there and my host got there, we were both flushed. Our mm-hmm. cheeks were a bit red. Mm-hmm. We were a bit shaky. Our palms were a bit sweaty. And we had just pretended to shoot the President of the United States. Mm-hmm. We didn't actually do it.
But wait, you didn't didn't spend the few seconds to look to make sure what the outcome. Like, he would have taken a second. So you didn't even add those extra seconds. So there's no way he had already left before the shooting, is what you're saying.
But I want to go to you just finished. He used the term a sniper's nest. So do you think that what he was really there to do to set it up for somebody else? And that's why he was able to make it down those flights of stairs in 90 seconds and why he wasn't flushed, et cetera? That's a great title.
No, that's what you're saying, right? Is that what you're saying, David?
No, I'm saying that he wasn't at the window at the time of the shooting.
He set it up.
He set the window up for the actual assassin.
That's what Yvette's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he went down to the second floor lunchroom and he was there. And
prior to the shooting.
Encountered. Mm-hmm. And that's why he wasn't sweaty or out of sorts or flustered in any way, shape, or form, because he couldn't have been. He hadn't just come from the sixth floor or four floors up. He was very calm, and whereas I wasn't. And so I know. I just know.
So they had him. They said, "Hey, his job in his mind was the prep guy. He went in,
prepped it up,
set the gun, mm-hmm. set the room, left it locked, unlocked, they had a key, whatever. He made it prepared, the window, everything's ready to go, mm-hmm. and then he walked down the flights of stairs, the person took the shot, and he got blamed.
Mm-hmm. And he got blamed. He didn't know that his rifle had been taken from his home and then planted at the book depository building, where three cartridges were also planted there that had been pre-shot.
Do they still have those in evidence? Can't they get DNA off of them? I'm sure they're smart enough to wear gloves even. They didn't know about DNA back then, but I'm sure they wiped everything down.
No such stuff back then. Mm-hmm.
But they could have DNA on it. But then the guy could say, why did the CIA guy handle it? And they'll come up with a reason.
Well, that's one of our complaints now. I mean, there's DNA now. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, why was there never a test of that full bullet found, which is called the magic bullet? Why was there never a test of that bullet to match it to the Oswald rifle?
Is that still the case today?
I can solve the case. I just thought think of this. Okay. He went immediately downstairs, was apprehended, took him into custody. They were moving him and Ruby killed him. They took him and they buried him. Or if they didn't burn his body, his body should have residue of the firing of that gun. If he has no firing gun gunpowder residue on his hands and his shirt and his body, can't we exhume it? He's got clothes. Did they change his clothes? But they might be able to prove that he doesn't have any gunpowder on him.
That's a possibility. Same with Governor Comey, because he went to his grave with lots of fragments still in him. And, of course, President Kennedy's body, but they'll never exhume that. Mm-hmm. But there was tests done on Oswald, just by the way, so you know. Mm-hmm. And there was no paraffin. Well, they did a paraffin test, and they found that there were paraffin marks on his hand.
Oh, so they exhumed him. They did exhume him.
They did exhume him. They found paraffin tests on his hand, but nothing on his left cheek, which would have occurred had he had that rifle up in a fire position, mm-hmm. and there was no such thing. But the Warren Commission said, he washed his face at some point when he was in detention. Well, then why was there paraffin on his hand still?
Right.
Paraffin, that's not gunpowder. Paraffin is wax. Explain that. What's the difference?
Well, it's just the name of the test that they do. It's a paraffin test to determine gunpowder.
Oh, I got you.
And distinguish it from other possibilities. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So none on his cheeks, some on his hands. And if he was handling the guns and the ammo and loading the guns, he could have residual or?
Yes, it would be residual. When they test fired the Oswald rifle, everyone had had gunpowder or residue on their right cheek if you're a right-handed shot. But there was no such evidence found on
Here's
Oswald.
Here's one. If they got the fragments in the other people, mm-hmm. I don't know. I was gonna say because the paraffin test our chemical today we can do DNA and they can actually break down the chemicals and determine that the gunpowder composition doesn't match this bullet to that bullet. They're different right. levels mm-hmm. of carbon, different levels mm-hmm. of this and that, right?
Would you yep. say that that still needs to be done?
Absolutely.
Well, it would certainly be helpful if mm-hmm. it could be done. It's always baffled me why certain tests, now that we've, through the advancements of science and ballistics and all those things, mm-hmm. why they haven't been applied to this case.
Mm-hmm. Because the same reason...
It doesn't make sense to me, other than to keep it covered up.
The same reason mm-hmm. they don't release those other documents.
I was just going to say that the majority of the documents, like 80% of them, were released in the 1990s. What is left that needs to be released?
The other shoe.
Right. What is the shoe that needs to be, that's going to drop with the release of these documents that's once again being held back? Or is there something?
Well, there definitely are documents still being withheld, and they're claiming that they're withholding them to protect the names of informants and other sources and operational methods and the like, even though this is going on 55 years later.
Yeah, that would be right. easily it's redacted. Insane. Just that.
Easily redacted. If there's anything, any shoe to drop, I think it may pertain to Oswald's connections to intelligence agencies. I think the problem is that that Oswald may be shown to have been either an FBI informant or a CIA agent or a naval intelligence officer of some kind, or at least had connections to them that would be very embarrassing to the government. And so that's the possibility of the documents that remain, plus his trip to Mexico, as we discussed. But I don't think that there is any massive, overwhelming evidence to come out because of the years that have passed. I think they had shredding machines back then, so I right. think that's what's happened to them.
That really it's all about the embarrassment.
Right.
It's all about covering up incompetence that you were talking about.
Well,
it's
not just the embarrassment.
The collusion.
It could turn dissension, too. For American people could... Okay, so people could turn the okay, so...
It's the collusion with other governments as well. That comes to the surface that I still think that's a big deal that people just don't want... Look at the way that it is today. People don't want to believe that the Soviets... Here we are once again... Okay, and once it was the Soviets, now it's the Russians. But we're still talking about a certain meddling.
People don't want to hear that Bernie Sanders did not win the Democratic nomination. Come on.
But don't you think that's part of it as well, David?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the government is always in the business of trying to...
The government is in the business of making deals.
Opinion.
Well, I think that... You know what's funny is I think that the government believes that they're operating in the best interest of the American people. But in the 60s, it definitely seemed like they were a very rogue, violent... You know, I was reading, they had... wait, let me find this. Hold on. First of all, there's also a concern that the Soviets feared that there was a conspiracy behind the death of Kennedy, perhaps organized by the right-wing coup of JFK's successor, Lyndon Johnson. Of course, now that only speaks to me. That speaks to me that the Russians are more involved, because there's no... The best confession is an unsolicited alibi, and that is pushing blame on somebody else. That says Russians right there. The Russians want you to believe it's John F. Kennedy. Then the Russians are guilty. I'm sorry, Putin. Don't come over here.
But don't you find that
email.
Interesting, David? That I mean, is it? Are we talking? I mean, here we are, 50 years later, and we're talking about the same general thing.
Because the shoe never dropped. We never got the truth, and nobody's buying it.
Well, we're still talking about
American people
from
are not buying
Soviets
it.
And or Russians.
You know what it is? Our intelligence agencies,
let's let David
in their
talk about
wisdom,
this. Joke.
Underestimate the American people.
David.
Right. David.
Well, as JFK himself said, if we don't learn from our history, we are doomed to repeat it. And here we are. You know, the circumstances are slightly different. Mm-hmm. But you have to keep in mind that at that time, in the 60s, the Cold War was huge. Mm-hmm. And the paranoia was huge. And so for the government to even, or for the people to find out that the government was, A, involved with organized crime and anything, mm-hmm. would have been shocking. And to find out that they were involved in political assassinations of foreign leaders like Castro or Diem, mm-hmm. or the Congo leader Lumumba, mm-hmm. Would have been shocking at that time. And I think we've become desensitized over the decades. And so I don't know that this is as shocking today as what's going on, but from what I can judge from where I sit here, people are upset about the possibility of the Soviets being involved in in the political process of Americans, and I think that they want answers, just as we want answers to what happened 55 years ago. They want answers today, and I think we can all agree that the government is doing its absolute damnedest to make sure we don't get those answers.
Mm-hmm. You've done your homework, because you know what? It's amazing that that's one of the things I was just leading to a moment ago when I was talking about the Russian, the CIA. Actually, I was talking about their assassination attempts, and then you just mentioned Lumumba. According to a summary of facts, the CIA considered killing the leader, Lumumba, the Indonesian president, Sukarno. They had like a list of people they wanted to kill at the time. I mean, like, our CIA was like a rogue assassin, a hit squad.
Yeah, it was. And the debate is, how much did the Kennedy boys know about that, or was this all being clandestinely done behind their back? And there are some documents that suggest that Robert Kennedy didn't know this was going on, and he was incensed. And, of course, we now know that after the Bay of Pigs, JFK fired the CIA director, Alan Dulles, who just happened to become one of the 7 Warren Commission members that looked into his assassination. And this was critically important for the CIA, because he could, all the documents of the CIA to the Warren Commission would go through Dulles, and he would have the right of redaction, withholding, with doing everything to make sure that the CIA was protected.
So after all of this and all of our discussion, what do you hope that the American public gleans, not only from your book, but also from the potential of them releasing all these documents? What is it you think Americans should get from this?
Well, I think hopefully that we'll finally get the truth. I think that Americans can handle the truth.
I think that we're big boys now, girls.
And I think that my book, you know, contributes to that. I think that there's a lot of people before me, researchers, that have contributed to that. And by the way, even the United States government's official version as to what happened has officially changed. The House Select Committee on Assassinations in 1979 concluded that there were 4 shots, one from the grassy knoll, and therefore 2 assassins. And so we now know but the question now becomes, what was the nature of the conspiracy? And I think people deserve to know the answer because this affected so much in history. A lot of people don't understand that, for instance, that the 3 successive U.S. elections, 1964, 68, and 72, were affected by bullets as much as ballots. And so you can now trace the presidency all the way up to Trump and just see what would have been different if John F. Kennedy had lived and had won re-election in 1964. It's staggering to think how history would be different. And I think we need to know what happened. And and particularly after Watergate, when we learned that governments could lie and cheat and cover up, we need to know what's going on so that it doesn't continue. And the fear is that it's continuing because of drone surveillance.
That's exactly
and more sophistication.
Well, it's continuing.
We're losing
that
battle.
We saw it in our elections this year. It's continuing. We see the corruption and the craziness. Hey, David, I'm sorry, we're almost out of time, and I don't want you to run out of time and not be able to plug your book, and you just mentioned it. So please, listen. People are going to have so many questions, and we want to let them find you and find your book. So before we lose any more time, because we literally are off the air in 2.5 minutes, and I've got to wrap it up in 2, so I have a half minute to close. So please, let's share with them where they can find the rest of this information. How can they find you? How can they find their book, your book?
Okay, the book is called Through the Oswald Window. It's on, the best thing to do is go to my website, which is www.throughtheoswaldwindow.com, and there you will find all the merchants all throughout wherever that carry the book, like Barnes & Noble and all those things, and you can then deal with the merchant that you are more comfortable with. And inside the book and on my website, there's a contact information, which I think you did, Joe. You reached out to me through my contact, Dave, at throughtheoswaldwindow.com.
And thank you for responding.
Questions or whatever.
Oh, you've been a great guest today. I want to thank you.
Are you
so
doing
much.
Signing
book signings?
I'm doing I start seminars again in January. Most of them are local to the Toronto area at this time.
No, he's in Canada.
I will probably branch out from there.
Okay.
Well, when you come to SF, San Francisco, you let us know and we'll bring you in live and do a follow-up, because I'm sure
I would love
our
that.
Email is going to go nuts after this.
Joe and Yvette, I've really enjoyed my time with you, and I appreciate your interest.
Thank you so much.
I wish we could have spent the whole 2 hours with you. I really do. Yeah, but we always like to do this hour, get the feedback and the emails, and then we'll do a follow-up show. So I'm already starting to plan follow-up shows down the road from people that came on before you. So right, we will definitely have you back on.
Please let us know.
In fact, how about we plan to have you on in April when they release the rest of the documents?
Yeah, April 26th is when they're supposed to, and hopefully they will.
Well, we need to give you time to look through it and glean. We need you to do the research for us, because we're dumb Americans. We fell for it for 50 years.
I'll be happy to help
out. All right, my friend. We're almost out in like 40 seconds, so thank you so much for tuning in and coming on the air, and I appreciate everything you've done for us today.
Thank you. Pleasure talking with you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for that.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All the best. Bye-bye.
All right. That was awesome, huh?
He was such
you guys,
a great
guy. Great guest. And our first one was fun. I hope the audience had a blast. I had fun in the first half. In the second half, I wish I had another 5 hours to talk to
this guy. We do need another 5 hours with somebody like that.
Well, we'll get him back in. Let's give it time. We'll let him have a couple weeks to digest. Mm-hmm. So, towards the end of April, we'll see if we can't get him back on.
Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
And we will bust this thing back open. So if you are a JFK conspiracy theorist, come back at that time. In the meantime, we're almost out of time. We're going to be done in just a moment, so I'm going to flip you over to the commercials, and I want to thank you for tuning in. You've been a great audience, and if you have any questions, contact us at thevinylthought@yahoo.com.